feel bad because anybody just tuning in right now to listen to us as we are live from the Clevelander here in beautiful downtown Cleveland ahead of the opener. I think people have heard this take now three times this week, so I'm not breaking any ground here before we get into the JB Bickerstaff revenge game. How I'm looking at the Cavs, they are just the low commitment, fun, good time Charlie rebound that is an extension of what I think the Guardians were for a lot of us, where I can just watch it without living and dying with every moment because it's fun. You know they're a talented team, and we don't have to ask ourselves big questions until, like, January. I think they're the perfect palate cleanser for this craptastic Brown season.
I mean, it really is getting started at the right time, right? Like, you had the nice transition. Like, the Guardians made it out of the ALDS round, and so they kind of extended their postseason run, and then that ends in unceremoniously last weekend. But then you have a couple days where you have to think about the Browns, and then it's right back into the next team. I agree. Like, it's the season's starting at the right time. It feels like this is palate cleanser is probably a good phrase for it, but it's a nice kind of distraction from everything else going on with the Browns right now at a time of year where I don't want to say, like, I think people get excited for the Cavs to start up every year. Obviously, when LeBron was here, it was a different feeling. But, like, this time of year, you're still sort of locked into Brown season with the understanding that the Cavs are there. I think this year it's completely reversed. I think it's like, hey, I'm going to turn the Cavs on and watch from, like, game one on because I need something else to occupy my sports time. And on the flip side of that, I think it's kind of more like, yeah, the Browns are still there too, and I might turn them on when they're on certain days.
What's funny about it is I also think the fact that this is the JB Bickerstaff revenge game, I actually kind of think it's a good tempo set because I think you get it out of the way early, and I just don't think there's any ill will. Like, I was the guy that was like, all right, let's get this Joker out of here, and I'm happy to see him back. Like, I'm happy he landed on his feet. I wish he would have chosen a better job than the Detroit Pistons, but like even tonight, like, this doesn't come with, like, the weight of a coach or GM or any sort of revenge game that we hate. You know what I mean? This is, oh, we're going to see an old friend, and you're probably going to beat him by 30 points, and, you know, it'll be cool to see JB and know he's okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've kind of pondered whether or not he was good, what type of reception he was going to receive in this game tonight. Well, I mean, it's interesting because, like, I understand fans were fed up with him at the end of last season and they just didn't think he was the man for the job to the point where
I am the fan.
Well, yeah, it wasn't just you. I heard an entire I guess you could say maybe most of the arena boo him during the announcing of the starting lineups and the coach in his last appearance in this arena. Like, during the playoffs, he was getting booed by the fans when they announced his name. Like, that tells you that they were that it was maybe you were one of the more vocal ones about it, Nick. But people were fed up with JB during the playoffs last year, and just kind of where they felt like they have exhausted the potential of where this team could go under him. And I understand why, but I do think, like, I can't look back on his era, even if it ended in a way that we felt like he wasn't, you know, getting the most out of this team, and you know, you had tapped into everything you possibly could with him. There was no resources left in that way. I don't look back and feel any sort of negativity about the way JB coached here. And he was the perfect coach to get you to the stage where, okay, you were a rebuilding team, you had all these young players, and now where do they go from here? Okay, now you have a new coach who's supposed to take them to the next level. And I think that had been talked about for several years, that he was kind of the coach to get you to the coach. And that's okay. Like, he didn't have to be the guy that wins you a championship. I think we can look back fondly, and I hope that he gets a good reception tonight. I think he should.
You know,
and I think he will. But again, it's hard to know with Cleveland fans, given how the last week's gone.
What's interesting about what we're talking about with this, though, is I think it makes tonight so much easier that Kenny Atkinson in one game looked like he answered every criticism I had of JB. Whether it was Evan Mobley and Evan taking ownership, whether it was spacing by virtue of a system, whether it was even, like, a lack of rigidity with the lineup and rotations. Like, some of this is, if in any way Wednesday's game had set me off with any of the old cliches, I probably wouldn't be in as good of much mood. But that first game was so dominating, and it really did. Like, everything that I had spent 6 months saying, these are the things JB isn't doing, Kenny Atkinson did in game one, so I can feel good about Kenny. And here's the other part of it. I don't really have any fear of JB doing something. I think he walked into the worst situation in the NBA. And I think they have some talent. I don't think they have the ways to get dramatically better. And so even if he does end up making us regret, let's say he gets the Pistons and within the next 3 or 4 years, they're really, really good and they challenge you. Maybe they're even better than the Cavs. It's going to take so long to get there that by the time it gets there, the Cavs hopefully have kind of resolved their side of the street to where they've had enough success where there's no bitterness there and no like, oh, should we have kept him because this thing has gone so well.
Yeah, I mean, the Pistons are looking for him to do what he did here for sure. I like that you bring up the first game and what Kenny Atkinson showed you. It would be sort of – it wouldn't have been a good look if he shows up in town back in July, or I guess it was the end of June, and he's like sitting there hyping up how much he's going to use Evan Mobley and what this offense is going to look like and how excited he is about Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley and all these different guys. And then he comes out and just runs the exact same style of offense that J.B. Bickerstaff did. Like, that would have been a truly, like, fall
on your – We call that the Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, that would have been, like, fall on your face type moment to start the season.
I spent 6 months in my barn learning analytics. And then day one, what are analytics? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like, that would have been not good for him and not good way to start. So I agree with you. Like, the fact that he came out and basically kept his promise as to what he was trying to do, especially when it comes to Evan Mobley – I think it should give people reason to be excited about this team, about what the potential of this team is. And I think that's honestly one of the bigger questions for this group now is Evan Mobley the thing that is unlocking him, that next level of his game like Kenny Atkinson is trying to do? Is that the thing the Cavs are missing to take that next step?
So I do want to get into that a little bit later in the show.
Yeah.
And I actually want to get it right ahead of Fedor at 4:40 because I think it's going to dovetail perfectly into our conversation with Chris. But, like, just to bring it back to the JB revenge game, homecoming, whatever you want to call it, it's a revenge game, right? Like, JB wants to win this simply to stick it in their arm,
right? They're going to have a video for him, by the way.
Yeah,
I was talking about this the other day. I understood why they did, like, videos for LeBron when he came back and Kyrie, even though he, like, skipped the first, like, 10 times he came back and they finally were able to play this video. They dusted off the tape of this video they were going to finally run to honor him. And even Kevin Love when he came back once he was with the Heat. Like, I understood the three, like, figures of that team. I even kind of understand, like, Ty Lue. But, like, have we gone too far with the tribute videos at this point where it's like they're doing it for everybody?
No, see, this is where
you left for
me.
Charlotte, and if you had come back, like, first Cavs game back,
yeah,
when you were in town, they could have played a tribute video for Nick Wilson.
Yeah, where was that?
Yeah,
all three teams could have done it. All three teams, and nobody did it.
I'm surprised they didn't, like, extend it to that level because it's getting a little ridiculous with these tribute videos.
But see, that I think what you're speaking to is the ridiculousness of ring culture, that the only thing that should be celebrated in the pantheon of a team's history and the entire arc is, did you win a championship? And that's just not how fans work. Like, I don't want that to be how fans work. Like, does the – like 25 years now, should we not have a day where we celebrate the 2024 Guardians because, well, they didn't win a ring? Or, like, do we not celebrate the 90s team? Now, those are teams that actually made the playoffs.
So,
like,
Stephen Vogt coaches this team, like, 10 years, but they never get past the eight. Like, the farthest they ever get is the ALCS. Then he comes back 10 years later, and we just play a tribute video for him. Like, hey, good job on all those appearances.
You're waiting a tribute video. Like, it takes some intern 15 minutes to put together. It takes 60 seconds.
Okay, that takes a lot longer than
you think. It takes their whizzes. They're super talented.
I guess for a coach, it might not take very long because it's just shots of them, like, pointing and screaming and, like,
well,
putting
clapping,
their hands up and clapping along
the sideline. Don't forget clapping.
And, like, tap, like, sell, you know, high-fiving guys as they come back to the bench.
Why would it be a bad thing if they put out a video?
It's not that,
like,
it's a bad thing.
JB did thing that like Randy Whitman never did, John Lucas never did. Like, look to all the coaches that we had. And by the way, you can go back before
Lenny
Wilkins.
So does Byron Scott get a video? Because
he coached here at one point? He never made it to the playoffs. Like, JB covered a five-year rebuild. You're being very dismissive. I'm so surprised. As the cynical person at the station, I'm surprised that the guy sitting across from me is doing this. But why wouldn't you celebrate what JB accomplished?
I'm not saying you can celebrate what he accomplished by, like, having a moment where when you announce his name in the starting lineup, be like, J.B. Bickerstaff, and everyone stands up and gives him a round of applause, and it's like honoring, like, hey, thanks for all you did here. You don't have to play a tribute video.
But why does a tribute video matter that much? You're acting like...
Because I just think there's certain levels of, like, you mentioned how the intern taking time to put it together. What is the level of what you did here that it takes to actually warrant somebody sitting down to put together that video?
I mean, I think JB's on the lower end of it, but, like, it's two playoff appearances. They built – I mean, think about this. Think about how many teams
the NBA – So if he had lost in the first round to the Magic last year and things had really – like, if it had really gone out sour on him, does he still deserve a tribute video then?
They won a playoff series. They went to the playoffs two straight years.
I'm just saying, if you lose to Orlando,
the last 2 years they won 99 regular season games.
I'm just saying, if he loses to Orlando last year in the playoffs, it becomes your two playoff appearances are you got gentlemen swept by the Knicks and they embarrassed you, and then you lose to a team that you lost in the end of the regular season to get on your schedule so you can play them in the playoffs.
They didn't. You're weaponizing his success and then diminishing it.
The difference between tribute video and not is if you win at least one time.
That is not what I said.
You get a tribute video.
You are being very derivative right now, and I just wanted to say the word derivative. No, I listen. I'm not saying you have to give the man, like, a plaque or, like, raise his number in the banners, but you can say, like, hey.
Let's just do it like the Indianapolis Colts. Two playoff appearances, J.B. Bickerstaff. Up to the Raptors.
Spencer is drinking Haterade. Will you boo J.B. Bickerstaff today, or will you cheer an injury if he, like, blew out an Achilles? Maybe we'll put it that way. But as we continue on.
Put him up there with Nate Thurman.
Do you want – that man went to Bowling Green. He is an Ivy Leaguer, and
hey,
I will fight
you. Don't look
you.
At me. Lima is the president of the take Nate Thurman's number
well,
down.
Well, I'm looking at the VP, and I got something to say about that. Does J.B. Bickerstaff deserve a video tribute tonight, or should they just go ahead and ignore
him?
No. I want all or nothing. Should they not even say his name over the speakers? And we got another game on Sunday. This time, new quarterback, new play caller, new left tackle. We got plenty to get to with our next guest. He joins us every Football Friday. Former Browns offensive lineman Jason Pinkston joining us now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. What's up, Pink?
What's going on, fellas?
Not a whole lot, man. Turns out the Browns are really bad. Ken Stefanski. Ken Dorsey's the new play caller. There's a new starting quarterback, and we got a new left tackle. Really nothing. Nothing's really up. It's kind of a same old Friday here for the Cleveland Browns.
It's our new normal, huh?
Oh, man, I wish it wasn't, but it is. Yeah. What was your reaction to Ken Dorsey taking over play calling?
I was kind of surprised. I honestly was. You know, I thought Stefanski, you know, I will say this. I don't think that was a choice made by him. I think that comes from up above. You know, a guy like Stefanski who's had a lot of success in the NFL calling plays, I don't think that he just relinquishes that position because he wants to. It'll be different on Sunday just to see what Ken Dorsey, you know, throws out there and what he can come up with and see if we can, you know, get the offense moving and score some points, put some points on the board.
Jason, along those lines, is the change at quarterback obviously being forced here with the injury to Deshaun to Jameis and this move to Ken Dorsey becoming the play caller, is that enough, you think, to be able to spark some sort of change and provide some sort of, I guess, better outcomes for this offense that's obviously struggled to this point?
I would like to hope so. You know, I think we're at a point in our season where we're willing to try anything to get a win, and I'm all for that. I don't think, you know, it's going to be – I don't think James is going to step in there and do what Joe Flacco did for us. I don't have hope for that. I do have some hope that – right now, I'm open for anything. You know, I'm still watching every Sunday. I'm still tuned in. I'm still cheering for him. Not giving up on this team. You know, we've been in this spot before, and I'm just hoping to see that you know, they can go out there and maybe there is some things going on in the locker room that we need to, you know, to a win solves everything. You know, I don't know if it's going to be this week with Baltimore. They're a very good football team. They're playing very good football right now. But if it goes out there and gives us a spark and we put some points on the board and we have something to look forward to the following week, I'm all for it.
Pink, I'm just kind of fascinated in the dynamics in the locker room right now, because obviously at 1-6, we start to have the conversation about, you know, are you going to lose the locker room? So you've been in plenty of locker rooms. I'm sure you've been in a locker room or two where the coach did lose the locker room. How does a coach like Kevin keep his players invested and keep his players from keeping himself from losing the players in a situation like the Browns, if wins, which are always the answer, aren't readily available?
I think you have to be open and honest with them and understand and take ownership of, you know, situations that the team has been in and own up to some of the mistakes that he has made and own up to some of the mistakes that the players have made. You have to be very honest with your guys. They're all adults. They're all professionals. You got Pro Bowlers in there. You got future Hall of Famers in there. The honesty is the key, and you have to keep coaching them hard. Hold everybody accountable. Hold yourself accountable. I've been in that locker room with Coach Shermer my first year, and you know he was unfortunately fired after 1 year. But you know we had our early bye week, week four, and we lost 12 games straight, and it was very hard to show up every day knowing that, you know, it was going to be a struggle to get a win, and we were dealing with injuries and different quarterback changes. It was rough. But, you know, for him, I think Kevin is a good guy. I think those guys respect him in that locker room. They've won a lot of football games with Kevin. We've been to the playoffs with him. So I don't think there's a respect thing going on there, or I don't think he would lose the locker room. I think, you know, some of those guys in that locker room are very professional, and they can keep it together and, you know, get through this season.
Talking with Jason Pinkston, former Cleveland Browns offensive lineman. Going back to the offense and the change of quarterback here, we know the trade deadline is looming. Is Jameis Winston potentially auditioning, you think, for other teams where the Browns could then try to trade him come November 5th?
I would think everyone is auditioning. When you're losing football games, every game is an audition for you. You never know what's going to happen. I don't think that you're going to get much value from Jameis in a trade, but you know there may be something there. He's only started ten games over the last 5 years. So I don't know how much, you know, teams are going to value that and making a trade for him. But I think when you're losing football games, it's easy to point the fingers and you hear all the rumors of this trade and that trade. You got to do your best to ignore it and just show up and do your job and prove that you want to be here and play in that city and play for this team. We're just going through a very extremely tough time right now. It's a tough season, and I'm just looking for our guys to stand up, be professional, and do what's right and go hard as you can and try to get this thing turned around. You want to look for the guys that are fighting and scrapping and doing everything possible to win a game for your football team.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
All good, no problem.
In relation to the trade deadline, in your eyes, who are some of the untouchable players that the Browns should in no way, shape, or form move on from in 2 weeks?
Myles Garrett is number one. Myles Garrett, Denzel Ward, those are two guys right there that you cannot absolutely lose. I would have to also throw JOK in that category. And honestly, man, from that point on, you never know. When times like this, you know, I could be wrong here. You know, I could be completely wrong. I hope we don't. I truly hope that we don't lose anybody. But you know, when you're losing like this and things aren't going your way, everybody's essentially could be traded, unfortunately.
Pink, looking to this Sunday, I know we asked something a little similar at the beginning, but I did want to circle back to this. Are you expecting the offense to look better on Sunday?
I hope so. I truly do hope so. I mean, but it's been rough, man. It's just one of those years where things have just not gone our way, and some things have really hurt us. Injuries and just play and obviously Deshaun wasn't playing well. That's no secret. I'm hoping we come out with some different looks and we can move the ball. Obviously, we got Nick Chubb back and he's obviously this is his second game back and hopefully he can get a couple touches and move the chains and maybe break a big one. I would hope to see some different looks, maybe something similar to what Buffalo did. You know, Ken Dorsey spent a lot of time there with Josh Allen. But we're going to have to see. I'm interested to see what happens. I really, truly do hope that we can come out and play at least a competitive game of football and try to get a win.
Jason, as we if problems persist this season, we're already starting to have conversations about like whose jobs are on the line and what does this look like next year at the quarterback position and all these different things. Even though it is only week 8, which is hard to believe, we still got 10 more of these games to watch with this team. But from your perspective, and I know you don't necessarily have like some inside scoop or anything here, but if the Haslams need a sacrificial lamb of sorts at the end of the season, who do you think is maybe most in danger of being that sacrificial lamb?
You know, I know the Haslams, pretty well. You know, they came at the end of, my career there. And that family, they were nothing but great to me. I don't think that they would sacrifice anybody. I think they would stand up and do the right thing by all parties involved. And if someone has to go, I think they'll really truly explain that situation. Hey, we took a chance on this or whatever the case may be, and it just didn't work out for us, and it didn't work out for our program. And I think they would give the answer, hey, we wish them nothing but the best. I don't think they would ever go out and try to hang somebody out to dry and point the finger at anyone. From my experiences with that family, it's been nothing but great. And when you're in this business and you're a football player in the National Football League and you're owner of a team, and all the responsibility is on your shoulders, and then you roll that down to your general manager and then all your folks on the staff. So I think they would stand up and hey, you know what? Take ownership of what has happened. And point the fingers at themselves rather than point at somebody else.
Pink, let me ask you here. And Jason Pinkston joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So if those conversations do come down the pike, they're 1-6 now. At what point, like how much losing do you have to get to before you have to ask yourself whether Kevin not only makes it to next year, but maybe even makes it through this year?
You know, that's interesting. Typically, the bye week has always been weeks where you see big changes made with coaching staffs, and obviously you're trading players by the deadline there. I think if anything would happen, it would be the bye week. I think looking back on this season and how we started, I hope that they don't make a change at the head coaching position, because I really do – I truly do believe in some of the things that Kevin Stefanski is doing and he has done. You know, he's proven that he can win in the National Football League. He's proven that he can get that team to the playoffs. I just think there were a lot of instances, obviously, with the injuries played a huge part. Not having Nick Chubb was a huge deal. The O-line was banged up. You got to throw that in there. I'm not making excuses, but it's plain as day that we weren't ready to go like we would have been. Now I think that if we can go into this — I'm talking about the draft already, I hate this — if we go into this draft and we can get a couple players and kind of regroup, some players on the offensive line, we might have to make some changes there, and we add a couple key players, I think Kevin can still win with that group of guys. I truly do still believe in the Browns, and I'm not trying to be a homer or biased. I love that football team. I love that community. Obviously, there's going to be changes going to be made, and that's evident, But I would like to see it, like a healthy group of guys take that field, from the offensive line to the quarterback to the defense. Everyone be finally healthy and see if things can really fall our way.
All right, Pink, we have about 30 seconds, buddy. If this season is already lost, Miles has been playing through a pretty serious injury. Should they sit him if they think they have no chance of making the playoffs?
You know what? I think the character of Miles, he wouldn't allow that. I think he is one of those guys that is a complete warrior, and he's going to do everything possible to go out there and perform for his teammates and his city. I don't think he would want to sit. Now, if the injury is the injuries are bad enough, then I would absolutely say, hey, Miles, guess what, buddy? I love you to death. I appreciate what you're trying to do for our team, but we need to try to get you healthy and keep you as healthy as possible. And I tell him, hey, you're not playing. I wouldn't even allow him to bring equipment or pads or anything to the game. But I think with the character of that guy and how he cares about his teammates and his brothers in that locker room and that community and those fans that are paying good money to come see him play, I think he's going to be on that field as much as he can.
All right, Pink, before we let you go, do you still dress up for Halloween?
If the kids want me to, I will. I don't mind it. I'm all good for an adult Halloween party. But, you know, I got a 5-year-old son and an 11-year-old daughter, so it's always dress up over here. My son wore his Superman costume to a volleyball game and out to dinner last night. So we're always dressing up in something.
Yeah, we got two members of the House of Hogwarts on the bus this morning as well. So I'm right there with you, buddy. Jason, let's hope for a win. Let's just hope the next 10 games lead to what's best for the Cleveland Browns. We're just going to end it up. We're going to end up with open-ended wishes for the Cleveland Browns there, Pink. Be good, bud.
Have a good weekend, fellas.
You too.
Thanks, Jason.
Jason Pinkston on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. It sounds like Pink and I disagree with how close this thing is to spiraling out of control. And I think
just looking at it through brown-colored glasses, you think?
This is no
disrespect to Jason, because I think his analysis is awesome, but I do think he does bring like a positive vibe to the show whenever we have him on. He tries to stay as positive as possible about the Browns.
I think he is, yeah. Like, I look at this weekend as this is either going to be the thing that we pull the nose up a little bit and maybe get to 7 wins, or this is going to be the thing.
Tough week for that.
Well, I mean, but I think that's the stakes, because I think if Shelby Harris was right in that the Browns fans, the 5% of them that cheer the injury, not 90, that's okay. If that's true, I mean, you could see the defense quit. And if the defense quit, this thing's over. If the defense starts to fall apart, or if there are guys who are mad, or if they don't want to play for the fans, there's no way you're pulling the nose up. And maybe that's the best thing for them. It also coincidentally happens to be the worst thing for Kevin Stefanski. Because if they're 1-16, 2-15, there's no way. You cannot survive that with a team that came in, no matter the Deshaun stuff. Like, I know it's so easy to just to cut the thing and go, nah, it's all Deshaun. And guys, it is so much more than just Deshaun to get to 1-6, to fail to the level where they are, where even just the offense looks non-functional, and the defense actually had a couple dysfunctional moments as well this year.
Yeah, I also thought, because I asked Jason about, like, if the Haslams need something to I called it a sacrificial lamb. Maybe that was the wrong wording. I didn't mean to put him in a tough spot where he's, like, going to have to be critical of the Haslams or anything like that. What I was trying to get at with that question, though, was just the idea that, like, we've seen the Haslams move on from coaches – for worse than or you know, for less. Like, it's I can't help but wonder. And we did a whole segment, Nick, talking about, like, the emotional reactions of the Haslams at times, and how they make decisions and their decision making process, and how they listen to a homeless man in terms of drafting a quarterback at one point in 1 year. Like, that speaks to somebody who does sometimes make those rash decisions in a moment of time. So I understand what Jason's saying. Like, I don't think they would. I think cooler heads will prevail, and they look at this level-headedly. But history tells us that that's not necessarily the case. So what I was trying to get at with that question was simply just, like, is Kevin Stefanski's job on the line here? Is Andrew Berry's job on the line? Like, is somebody going to have to pay the price if this season ends with 2 wins, 3 wins in a year that was supposed to be about Super Bowls or chasing Super Bowls? Like, I understand what Jason's saying. Like, in a perfect world, yeah, like they look at this thing rationally. They say Kevin's done a lot for us. We don't want to move on from him, even though I guess some fans are ready to move on from him too, just like the quarterback. But at the same time, I like from what we know about the way this organization has made decisions before, I can't just blindly assume that Kevin Stefanski or Andrew Berry is going to be here, even though they just got contract extensions. Because if this thing continues to go in the direction it's going, I do think somebody ends up being like losing their job in all this.
The Browns have lost five straight. Deshaun's season is over. What does that mean for the rest of the season? For Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, Daryl Ryder and Andy Baskin talk about it with their podcast, It's Always Game Day in Cleveland, including post-game drops. Subscribe to the podcast now at 92.3thefan.com, the free Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcast. Sponsored locally by Smiley One and Bryant, Northeast Ohio's premier heating and cooling solution. So, I had a weird thought today. I got my twinnies on the bus today. They were dressed like Gryffindor or some such other. I know the Harry Potter movie, so I'm not going to
start wearing costumes on the show or something.
It's the first time I think in my adult life that I was like, I kind of wish I had something to dress up with this year. Yeah.
Yeah. If you did, what would you dress up as?
I haven't even made it that far. I just had a moment, and you got to understand, like, I haven't had this moment in a long time, but I was just sitting there like, it's kind of fun. Like, I probably have been too dismissive of the idea of adults dressing up. As a matter of fact, there was a time when we lived in Charlotte when the neighborhood was going, and I said absolutely not to Vanessa because I was being a crabapple. But, like, yeah, I think in the future, I don't know if it's a show thing because, you know, I don't want to try and rip off Lebatard because I think they do that. I don't even know
that's
a bit.
Their whole bit is that they do that.
Yeah, but they do it, like, multiple times a year,
but they
right?
do it, well, because there's like a whole game they play, like, with picks or in the NFL when you lose. Sometimes the punishment is you wear a costume. But the whole idea is that, like, they hope that they're – Some groundbreaking take or some groundbreaking news. Like think of me coming on the air and saying, bring on the Knicks, but I do it in a costume. Like, yeah. That's how you go super viral. That's, like, the idea.
Yeah.
So that would be kind of funny. It's honestly a good way to do it, but I agree. You can't steal.
When was the last time you dressed up?
Probably a costume party for Halloween. Like, I don't even know, maybe like 4 years ago now.
So it wasn't like, because I'm projecting now. I get the sense that how things go, and you can push back if it's otherwise. That if Brittany wanted, it was like you're gonna be Mufasa, she's gonna be with Nairobi or whatever the mom's name was, and your little man's gonna be like Simba. I totally see her shoehorning you into
that. No, Brittany hates Halloween, honestly.
What?
She does not like Halloween. I'm the one who loves Halloween.
What
in our
part
household.
Of it? Does
I'm
she
like,
hate?
I like watch. She
Is does it the
dressing.
Candy?
The dressing up stuff. No, she doesn't. Okay.
But she's an attractive woman. That's like
she doesn't hate Halloween. She doesn't hate Halloween from the standpoint of like, oh, get these kids out. Like, no. I mean, like,
hey, Dicker candy.
She hates Halloween as like an adult, where she's like, I don't like. Like adults dressing up and all that. She doesn't like doing all that.
I don't get that from the female perspective because women are cute.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
generally,
you look
that's,
cute.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, if you look like me, there's one way to go. It's Paul Bunyan.
It's funny you bring this up because I was thinking about this a couple weeks ago. Like, I wish I had a friend who, like, regularly had a Halloween party so that I could just, like, I don't do, like, the whole, like, furry thing where I'm dressing up just randomly and going, you don't know what the, Max looking at me
did
like
you
I'm crazy.
You just said the furry thing?
Yeah.
Where did we go from Halloween
you know
to furries?
Because furries are people who dress up in costume, like, year-round. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm saying that's not what I'm asking for.
Okay.
I'm saying I
well, thank God.
The idea of going to, like, a Halloween party is something that I would want to do and, like, dress up for that. Like, I think that's fun. And I wish I had a friend who had a Halloween party that I could do that with every single year, but we don't really have that friend in our friend group, unfortunately. But, like, Brittany is glad we don't have that friend because she doesn't want to have to dress up in any capacity.
I will say it feels like we kind of just stumbled across that you might secretly be into the furry thing.
No.
And that was, like, you kind of throwing it out there, testing the waters.
Yeah, every
as
year
were.
I take off that random week when Pittsburgh's hosting the furry convention. And
yeah.
I'm just not around. You know?
I think it makes a lot of sense. We're going to have to start tracking your PTO. No, it's bewildering because Vanessa's always – because, again – especially cute women. My wife is very beautiful. Loves to dress up for it. And I've been such a holdout.
So when was the last time you guys dressed up? Like, did like a couple's costume?
Oh, it had to have been before the kids.
So
we're
it's been
both
even
of
longer
us.
For you. Yeah.
Vanessa, Vanessa every couple of years will concoct something to go out in. But it has been, 2009, maybe 2010, because I think that's – Livy was just born. No, it wasn't 2010. Nope. And now all of a sudden I'm like,
I was in college then.
But here's the problem. I can't just go to Spirit Halloween because they don't have them for big people. And so I need like a big and tall like Spirit Halloween or like Spirit Halloween for fatties.
So my you might be onto something there.
Huh?
Costume store.
Business idea? For fatties.
No, so my
fatties and
my
furries.
My dad was always in sales for like he worked at like Nabisco and like these different companies or like was like food related companies. And at some point during his time working at Nabisco or something, he got given this free costume that's just this massive plastic Mr. Peanut costume.
Yeah.
And so he used to wear it when we were like a little bit older but still old enough that we were trick-or-treating. And he would just walk around and embarrass us in this Mr. Peanut costume. Yeah. People would be like, who the hell is in there? They thought it was the greatest costume ever. And so we've passed it around from like different members of our family. I think my uncle has it right now or something. So I look forward to getting that back and wearing it to embarrass my kids one day when they go trick-or-treating.
See, like that's what I would wear.
Yeah. That's like, it's a funny thing that we've now started in our family.
But again,
and my wife would Brittany would hate it. She'd say, "This is stupid. Why are you doing this?" But I would think it's absolutely hilarious.
That's even funnier. I will say though, if because people say like, "Well, why don't you just order it off Amazon?" Fat people don't order clothes online that we can't try out because we can't trust clothiers to actually live up to the sizing charts that they put on there. That's why. So I think. If anybody out there is going to open it up, 15% of sales. Spirit Halloween for fatties.
When I get this Mr. Peanut costume eventually, I'll let you – I'll let you borrow it.
Okay. I'm not going to those parties, Spencer.
Oh, my God.
All right? I'm a married man. All right? I would be a bear in that world too because I just – there's no other animal that kind of fits this. It's just – it's a non-starter for me.
All I meant was you can borrow the costume.
Yeah, of course.
That's all.
Sure. Sure, of course. Yeah. I'm sure you mean that forever.